I am George Young. My age is, I was born in 1888. That's enough.
You're enough? Okay.
And I was going to Frisco, my first trip ever to Frisco Island. I was going down with my dad with a load of wheat, a pair of horses on a sled. And as we turned the corner, it's like the new Frisco Road, that's the road that goes down by Haystack. Why, he stopped side of a telephone pole, and he wanted to know if I was in the, middle of the night, wanted to know if I heard a noise. First he asked me if I was asleep. I said no. And he wanted to know if I heard a noise. I said yes. I asked him what it was. He said the insulator on the telephone pole, telephone line was hooked onto it. And then he started on. He went down to Haystack. Well, now, I don't know. Maybe you have to run this over if you don't want it.
That's the year about 1893.
See?
Year about 1893.
1893 was when I made this trip.
It was only about,
I was about 5 years old.
Well, you mean to tell me they had a telephone here in 1893?
1893. I'm telling you about this insulator. The telephone line went from Frisco to Ashton on a pole, see?
Yeah.
On the road going down. It must have been here about that time.
He was only about 5 years old.
Yeah. See?
And his dad was going with the grist. You tell
him about
yourself.
And I was going with this grist down to Presque Isle, and we started from here about 12 o'clock at night. We got into Presque Isle about 9 in the morning, and we left Presque Isle in the afternoon about 4 and come back and get here about 11. It was quite a trip of about 5 years old.
Yeah.
I remember a lot about it.
And this was in the wintertime?
Well, it was either in the winter or spring, fall or spring, I don't remember. I know that the fellow who went along with us, who was going down with a load of potatoes, his name was Mr. Eastman, and he never caught up to him, and we never caught up to him till he was at Haystack. And we caught up to him, and Father went ahead, and he came back and he says, I'm going to take my peavey and help him start his sled when the horses pull, see? On to the bare ground. And he asked me if I could drive the team, and I said yes. We drove her up the hill, and then we swung off the road to a place where they fed. We built a fire and had our breakfast. That was before daylight. And I had a lunch, fed the horses. And then we started out after about an hour. And when we went by Haystack, way out in the field there, where you can see Hay the Mountain, he showed it to me. I could just see the outline of the top of it in the sky. And we went on to Presque Isle and to the grist mill. And the grist mill sat on the left-hand side of the street just before you crossed the bridge, Presque Isle Stream Bridge. And the man was Mr. Cox, Alec Cox, that run it. And he had a grist in the mill at that time. He had to grind that up over what I was in. And we didn't get it out about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and come back. But then when you get back, I telephoned, this was the first central station, was in Brad Haywood's building on Main Street.
What's there now?
In the store.
In the store on Main Street. He had a store.
Yeah.
And they had this switchboard in there. And
then a fence. Ed Fenderson.
Just a minute. And the switchboard operator name was Etta Fenderson. She was the first one I remember, the first one. So they had that, she was in there, and after a while, Abigail Haywood, McNally Haywood, went in, that's Bear, and she was operator. And Etta married, I hope she was there for the time. Well, then we went along, and Dr. Dobson was our doctor. And he ran the telephone line at his own expense to Portage Lake, down across, straight from Sheridan, where you go down straight to the river there, and up over the bank, hit the Portage Lake Road, went to Portage. He ran that at his own expense. Along in about 1895, that an independent telephone company came in here.
1905.
1905 is right. How long is that?
Oh, that's okay.
1905. And they had a central office on Exchange Street, just below where Ron Mitchell lives, in that store where Ron LaBelle lives. Yeah. And that was operated by Georgie Ott Books. And they was only in here, and they put out Carl Hughes was their foreman, looked after the putting up the poles and stringing the wire. Well, it was quite a while after they put up the poles and got the wire strung on before they got their central operating. And the women had a great time on the line, and they all, you know, they're the ones.
I can imagine. Now, was everybody on the same
all
line?
All on the line. Our line was here, they was all could get on it, but there was no connection on the central.
Yeah.
I don't remember all the times they had the talking, you know.
Oh, I can imagine that.
Well, they stayed on here, in here for about 4 or 5 years, to my knowledge, and then they sold out. How's it going, Annie?
Well, you didn't tell what Carl did.
Oh, that's right. Well, but Carl was the foreman. He bought the poles and set the line, or bought poles and put up the line, Carl Hughes was.
Yeah.
And set up the line, see? And
he hired you.
Hired me to hire. He wanted to know if I could get out some poles, and I said, yeah. So me and my two younger brothers, we went down and got some poles out. And
set them on this road, they did.
Well, they sent them out. It was more than enough for this road, but they set them on this road. And the New England Telephone Company, which I think it was at that time, before the independent came in, was charged us $1.25 a month. And the independent come in and charged $1. When they got a big lot of people in the surrounding areas, see? And then after a while, they bought out the independent. And that utilized them so they put a switchboard. I didn't tell about the switchboard, did I? I'd be in the post office.
No, you didn't tell about Brad owning the store and with Alec being the post office.
No, I've jumped here a little bit.
That's okay.
Well, we'll go back to the switchboard. That was in Brad Haywood's grocery store. He had a grocery store.
Whit Hallett was clerk.
Whit Hallett was clerk. He married one of a neighbor's daughters, and he built the house where Lizzie Gallup lives.
Oh, yeah.
That was his home. That was a good ways back. And
and he ran the post office.
And the post office was in there, too, at the same time.
The telephone was there, too.
They're all in the same place.
Yeah. The store.
Just in a little corner, see.
And they had this desk, they had a table there, you know, about this square, and this switchboard was up there, and she had a stool with a hole on it, a back on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And after they sold out, of course they had to have, they got more switchboard on, and they had to have another girl, and they moved up into over Brooksy's store. They had the office up there. Well, about the last time I remember being in there, they had 2 girls for day operators in one night. That was quite a few years later. But where am I, Annie?
Georgie
Ott. Oh, yes.
Georgie
Ott was up. Now, some people say that Georgie and Bab worked together after they sold out. But to my knowledge, Bab didn't. I mean, Georgie didn't. When they sold out, she was through being operator for the independent. And they say that they was they worked together, but not to my knowledge. Bab was operator for years, quite a few years, alone, before they got the double switchboard.
Now, let me ask you something right here. Where was Brooks's store at that time?
Brooks's store is right where it is today. It used to be just...
Where's Brooks's store today?
Burnt down.
Oh, where the theater was.
Haywood's was down further, and Haywood's owned that hall where Collier, that store there, and they had a hall upstairs, used to dance and go to Grange and so forth there.
Oh, is that right?
And that's where the druggist, this Edith Thistle's father was. He was a druggist, and that's where he had his store. It was me and another fellow when he was going to high school, we used to buy these brandy drops to treat the girls.
I knew there was a drugstore here, but I didn't know.
That's one at that time. And then there was a fellow by the name of Billy Campbell had a drugstore too, but he was on the main street on the other side.
Where Chassis is now?
Yeah, we're just below that. Well, now I'm running from telephone to different
that
things.
It doesn't matter. That's
don't
what
make
makes
any
it
matter.
Good.
It makes a story out of it.
Yeah,
it's going to be kind of, I think.
Yeah, that's what makes it good. Was this Dr. Dobson the first doctor they had here?
I'm confused. It used to be a Dr. Doring.
It's first one we remember.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember.
My mother.
I was going to show you this, the building where that was.
Oh, yes.
This is the one right here.
She's got that lot where Brad Haywood lived. That was left to Hugh Haywood. He married Bab, and it burnt on them. And they moved down to the Doug McNally place where Bab, the boy, lives now.
Yeah. Now let me go back again. What is grist?
Grist is wheat.
And you had to take it all the way to Prescott to get it
grounded? Yeah, those days we raised our wheat.
Yeah.
Now, I've been wondering about this too, about putting this in, see, about wheat. And the girl at the office told me the other day to go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
It'll make the story.
We did. We used to have our own wheat.
Now, see, you take a kid like that, she doesn't know what grist is. I wouldn't know what grist is myself.
It's wheat. You ever seen a wheat?
I've seen a wheat. You got
this going?
Yeah.
You've seen wheat?
Yeah.
We used to raise beans and wheat.
I was kind of kidding my grandson the other day. He was down here, and I said, how much a bushel of wheat weighs? He says, I don't know. You almost through high school, you don't have a bushel of wheat weighs? No. Well, I says, it weighs 60 pounds. Well, it takes 5 bushel of wheat. 5 times 6 is 30. That's 300 pounds to make a barrel of flour. A barrel of flour weighs 196 pounds. But the only thing that isn't consumed in the house is the bran. They have the flour, the coarse flour, the Midlands, the Grimm, and the Hull. It's all consumed in the building amongst people, with just all but the bran, see? And out of 300 pounds of flour, of wheat, you get about 196 pounds of flour. A barrel weighed 196 pounds. But that wasn't much waste out of 300 pounds, see? Yeah, but we get a crop here of wheat on 20 bushels the acre. It was good. But in the West, on the prairies, they used to get 10 bushels. That was a good crop for them.
Well, now, when you went over there this particular time, how many bushels of wheat did you have on your
I think
flour?
We had about 30.
30 bushels. Now, you had to make more than one trip during the...
Oh, no.
Just one trip.
Yeah, took a pair of horses on a sled, went over.
I mean, this was your crop for the season?
Well, I don't know the whole of it or not. It was part of it anyway. See?
That's way back, you know.
I don't remember. But it was part of his crop. Yeah. Anyway. Of course, he had quite a family. There was only 13 of us.
13.
Yeah, I got one I wanted to give you. You all done with this one?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, go ahead. You just talk about anything you want.
Oh, I was like about 9 years old, and we had the old house. This is one we built ourselves here, Annie and I, when we got married. And it was a low, story and a half house long, one straight room right through it, you know what I mean? The partition, the doors is all straight through. One night in the spring of the year, when we used to drive the river here, Machias, it was 35 men came along here with the supper.
My Lord, are you kidding me?
Well, that's true.
35 men from
35 men come off the drive, and they was going home. I don't know if the driver was hung or what, but they come along here and they wanted their supper. So Father went to the door, and the boss told him, he said he wanted to feed the men. Well, he says, you wait and I'll find out. So he come in and talk it over with mother. And she says, yes, you tell him I got lots of eggs. And she said, I'll cook up a supper, they give me an hour. She had two girls around 15, 18 years old, and they went at it. And then I was trying to feed them and feed them. She cooked the eggs, fried them, boiled them, scrambled them, cooked some potatoes. Oven was big, had a big baker sheet, cooked it full of gingerbread, some biscuit, and fed them. And they were seeing the four Negroes in the crowd, and one fellow came in the house, and he see the organ, and he went out. They seemed to be very, very nice, kind of acting boys, and went out and asked Mrs. Young if she had anybody to play on the organ. I said, yeah. So she says, we'd like to have to sing after supper. So after supper, they come in, and she plays some songs. They sang three or four songs.
Wow, that's something.
If I remember right, they tipped the 50 cents.
Is that right?
Well, of course, we had to make out a bill for this. How much did poor my mother charge them for the supper?
Oh, I can't imagine. $2-$3.
Oh, my goodness.
35 cents apiece.
Is that right? Well, I had meant $2 or $3
I
all.
No.
Not
no.
A person.
35 cents apiece.
Yeah.
Of course, they made out the order with the boss of the room to order on the company, Ashton Company, and went down and got the body care. But the Negroes, I remember them singing, going down the road, singing away, happy as lark.
Yeah, happy as
it was pretty good, but that was, and in the meantime, my father was sitting in front of the fireplace. They had a little fire in it, and an old fellow came in, and he was talking to him. They were sitting there side by side, and I drew up a chair, sat dead, and I sit down and listened to talk. My father came from St. John, New Brunswick, and he talked a while, and come to find out they used to go to school together in St. John.
Is that right?
Yeah. My father left St. John's and came here when he was 10 years old with his grandfather, who lived right over here.
In that house?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always loved that house over there. There's something about
that. Now, I admire that house, but you look at that finish on that house.
Yeah.
Back in those days, and it's just as good, and it's similar to these finishes they put on now. Did you ever compare them and see?
No, but
you just noticed it.
There's something about that house that ever since I've lived here, I've loved it.
A lot of people
have
lived
there. Yeah,
I just
love that house.
We're the third generation. George is the third generation.
In that house?
No, here in the farm, here. And that goes with it, because that farm went there.
And the old fellow asked Dad, he says, how many children you had? Dad said, 13. He says, 10 living.
They don't hear me on it.
Oh, I didn't know.
Doesn't matter.
And it goes with it. And, he says, I beat you. I had 14.
That's pretty good, huh?
Well, it is. It was pretty good.
Well, when they had the first telephone here, did everybody in town have one just about?
No, the farmers out round didn't have one, not in town much. I don't think there was more than five or six switchboards in town that whole. That didn't get on, they didn't get on the telephone much till later in 1890. Six or seven or eight when the Ashland Company come in here. See?
Yeah.
They got more to it.
What's the Ashland Company?
It was a lumber company down to Sheridan here. You've seen dam down there.
Okay.
Now that dam is a novelty.
That lumber company didn't last very long, did it?
About 20 years.
20 years?
About 20 years.
Is that the one that was such a great big huge lumber mill, that one of the biggest ones around?
It was at that time. Ashland Lumber Company. Yeah.
20 years. Well, I thought I was under the impression that didn't last long at all. And it cost
It came about 19 Well, my father died in 1999 and he carried from the carpenter station two chests from the station to Sheridan with team, and they just had the frame up. I was with him. And about 1898. Right in there, that came right up off the same railroad.
Yeah.
See?
They built the railroad special down there to carry the lumber in to build the mill, didn't they?
Yeah, they built it was in Ashton before they built the mill, and then they run a spoiler down.
Yeah.
That's right. You from around here?
No, I'm not. I've been here 13 years, 14 years. Were you here, was the cheese factory here when you were a little boy?
Well, that come up the other day.
It was still there then?
Oh, yes. I've gone over with my father taking milk over to it.
But you never went in it?
Yes, I was in at that time, but, you know, I can remember these big hogsheads. They had the vet, the way.
Yeah.
You know, sitting there, people come in and got it. Got it free for nothing, so they were taking milk.
They use that to feed the animals, I suppose.
Yeah, pigs. But now, you know, something come up the other day. I got a kind of news on this. You know how they curdle the milk? All sweet milk. It's made with sweet milk. You know,
I know how my mother used to do it. She used to put it on the stove. How'd they do it?
Well, in the factories, they couldn't do that. You take a calf after it's born, and you feed it nothing but milk for 6 or 8 weeks. I won't say the definite time because I don't remember. And when they kill it, that calf is right on the clean floor all the time. Don't have anything but milk. And when they kill it, they take the rennet out of his stomach. Now I see this the other day, it says from the lining of the stomach. I read it. Now I don't know what that means, whether they just put that in for kind of a way so people would lose their appetite for cheese or what.
They put this in the milk?
They just takes a little to curdle a pail of milk.
That's tripe, isn't it?
Tripe?
Sure.
You know what tripe is?
Sure. It's the lining of a cow's stomach, isn't it?
Yeah, but a calf. I'm taking a calf.
They don't have any tripe on their calves.
And there's an acid in it, I suppose, that curdled the milk.
Is that right? No, I've never heard that before.
Well, I went from here one time when I was a kid down to, you know how that river road goes down from Tyrus, that was that farmer Turner's.
Yeah.
Well, there was a Bartlett farm. My mother sent me down there after half a cup full of rennet. They had some. This Mrs. Bartlett, I was speaking about it to Margaret Mitchell the other day. I told her about how big lipped she was, and what a nice woman she was, and big, you know. And she was a jolly old soul, and she was always talking about when you go in there, how your folks was, you know. And we used to make cheese right on the farm here one summer. That's what she wanted the rennet for.
And that's what they call it, rennet.
Rennet,
this
yeah.
is the stuff they took out of the little castle.
Out of the staff stomach.
Well, isn't that something?
But now, what I wonder about, that thing going?
Yeah.
Are you checking the time on it, Jenny?
Yeah.
What I wonder about is, how did these old folks find that out, where to get that?
I can't imagine.
Hmm?
I can't imagine. Do you know?
No, I don't know, and I'd like to know, but nowadays I imagine that the scientists, the special scientists, have got something to do that.
Yeah.
See? I don't know for sure, but I would like to know how them folks ever found out to get that granite.
Well, I can't imagine, unless it all happened accidentally.
After when?
Accidentally.
Yeah, they must have experimented in something.
But how do they know enough to do that?
No enough. You know, our commission think them people smarter than we are.
Oh, well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. And I'll tell you something else, they had a lot more fun in those days.
They had more time to think.
Yeah, they did. They let us live. It was a good life.
Been running around in these woods some.
And there used to be an old church up on that Massachusetts Road, too. Kellick Church.
Kellick
Church. I used to go by that when I went to school when I was a kid. Old.
Yes, it was an old church that had four steeples on the top, on the corners, remember? The bell was inside of that.
You think anyone?
I think that was the first Congregist church there was in Ashland.
The first Congo. Yeah.
Because they built a new one down where it is now after that. Before that was written down. That stayed there a long time.
That was on the Messiah's Road. Where was it?
You know where the...
This side of where young Graham was locked. The old group.
Mm-hmm. Same side of the road, where the pine trees are.
I have pictures of it.
Yep. Can you tell a pine tree? Can you tell a pine tree when
it has pine cones?
Did you know a pine tree blossomed?
No. Imagine, yeah.
They have little blossoms, right?
Right up the hill.
Did you ever see one?
Right, no,
right
in a book.
The road where,
that thing going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I never knew it.
and there was a wooden sidewalk all the way to town, went from there up.
Last summer. And Gibson, Mr. Gibson, you know him over here?
My home was the old...
Up here or...
That was my father.
And women could stop talking, I'd ask him.
What's that?
Do you know Mr. Gibson?
Bud Gibson?
Yeah. Looks after the wood lumber?
Yeah.
He was here talking, and I asked about a pine tree brushed in. God, he said they never knew it. But they blossom on the old trees, and it's a very pretty yellow blossom.
I never knew that either.
I never see one. But there was a woman down in the southern part of the state last year had two of them. I saw it in the paper somewhere. And I said to Gibson, I thought maybe you'd seen him while you were on the news. He said, I never did. I never knew it. I can't tell you right now where I got that information. I don't know.
I told you, I read it in the paper.
Yeah, I guess that's right. My wife. My wife. She's smarter than I am.
Why don't you stop that a minute and play some of it back and see if he's coming?
There's a chance it was. I want to say because...
They kind of in the dollar and the other
Now that that's on, tell us again about that old road, or which road you went on.
Well, I will tell you. Now, what we called the old road to Briscoe went down through Frenchville and Castle Hill into Briscoe City. And the new road went from Ashton out through over the Worcester Ridge, that's the ridge out there, by down by Haystack, through Castle Hill, Mapleton, to Briscoe.
So they had both roads in 1893.
Well, now there were both roads were there. Just a minute. There was a mill here, right underneath the hill here, where Turner lived. And Mr. George McNally hauled lumber from that mill to Briscoe to sell, go on the train. Mm-hmm. And they hauled it down the old road. Well, now that's way far by my day. But I can remember the mill, because the first candy I bought, there was a store there in front of that bank, right behind Turner's house, out next to the road. And we was in there, and I bought my first candy I ever bought there.
Is that right? Now, they had a store and a mill there.
They had a store and a mill and a boarding house. That house that sits on the other side of the river, it's highest. Ashland side was the boarding house. And Claire Brewer was the clerk in that store, and for the company. He was the clerk.
That old house is still there, isn't it?
That old house is still there, and it's a nice house. George Moore had it fixed up good.
Well, it seems to me, is somebody living there now?
Yes, but I don't forget his name. I know who he is, but I can't think of his name.
So anyway, well, okay, that settles that fact. They did have both roads there.
That's right. Now, I want to say, how about the condition? It was in the summertime, because I wasn't there, it was dark. It came along with long.
Always went in the dark and came home in the dark.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And George was nearly hauling that lumber. He hauled down with four horse teams from this mill. It was a big mill. They made clapboards and lads and shingles and everything. The shingle mill was in Ash Garfield.
When he was getting those poles for the cow, he was only 15 years old. And his two brothers were younger than that, quite a lot.
Well, the time they had the mill down here at Turner's, and did they have the one in Sheridan?
No, this one was way ahead of it.
Yeah.
It was drawn up, this one mill was all done before that one come in. That come in from a concern from Bangor.
And that was in the early 1900s, that one in Sheridan. Yeah.
That was built in the last end of 1800.
Yeah.
And the other one was... Well, it was all done before the Ashton Company came in here. They kind of failed up.
How come?
I don't know. It was an awful drag to get the lumber out of here. Hauling it 20 miles, see? 24 miles. It was an awful drag. It cost quite a lot. Now, I don't know how it was, but of course, lumber was cheap. And this Ketchum and Clayton had this mill. Got that ring, Rand?
Yeah, that's right.
Right, see? They had this mill, see? And Ketchum was from Woodstock, and he married Clayton's sister. And he came up here, and she died from Woodstock, and he came up here. And Clayton had a sister that married a man by the name of Smith, and they had two children. They lived right where Turner lived. And Ketchum built that. Lost the house that they used to have there because they had kind of a boarding house. They kept some of the men in it. And in 1908, six, he built this house the Turner lives in, 1906. And of course, he had a lot of wild land, he bought a lot of land, him and Clayton did. They had 8,000 acres, I think, here in Garfield, when the fire burned over it. And they had lumber right handy, but after a while, the lumber got back further. And one spring, they didn't have the water to drive his lumber in, they were dragging it in with horses in the summertime.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. They must have had to cut their wood pretty close to the river, didn't they?
Well,
I mean, they couldn't go in too deep because they couldn't. Well,
I don't know. I wasn't in any of the camps at that time, but they had camps. Or there was, they went as far up back as Cary Brook and the 12 Mile Dam.
And they pulled that out with horses.
They drove it as far as they could, and when the water got slow, he was right down to a pond almost. They dragged it down with horses, see, in the summertime to keep it going.
And then in the winter with log haulers.
No, he never had no log haulers, never tore them, they went in.